Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the April 26th edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Aaron Curtis of Midco. He's at Bloomington, Illinois. Ellen Dearden from AgriView in Morton, Illinois. Brian Hoops of Midwest Market Solutions in Springfield, Missouri. And Mike Zuzlo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Look us up. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like as a podcast on our website, willag.org, and iTunes, the Google Play Store, Stitcher, SoundCloud, any place that you listen to a podcast, you can likely find our programming. Now, let's get a list of items that we should discuss for this edition of Commodity Week. Aaron Curtis, let's start with you. What's on your list?
Been pretty quiet here as far as what the producer has had any interest in selling. It's been really kind of dull, I guess. You know, I've coming off a period where we've saw some pretty active producer selling, so we still got a little bit of old crop corn to for the producer that still needs to be sold. So just curious what the panelists think is going to encourage that. Is it time? Is it price? Or what combination of that is going to encourage the farmer to kind of get engaged here again on old crop corn and soybeans?
Ellen Dearden of Ag Review, your items.
The trade has been a little bit nervous about lack of soybean buys from China, at least buys of U.S. beans. And yet, I'd like to point out that this is a pretty seasonal move that they switched their buys to South America. I guess the question I'd like to discuss is, when will China come back to the U.S., and will that be a big slowdown as the trade anticipates?
Brian Hoops of Midwest Market Solutions.
Yeah, you know, we're starting to see producers really getting active in the fields over the last several trading days here. They have been virtually doing nothing in the fields, doing very little field work whatsoever. But now everybody's going great guns, trying to get things moving at a fast pace. And I think in 2 weeks we will not be talking about any type of planning delays, and we'll be looking at, you know, what's our next direction going to come from.
And Mike Zuzlo.
We're kind of dovetailing with what Brian was just talking about. The ag sector, it looks like to me, Todd, and I'd be curious to hear what the other three analysts have to say, trying to stimulate maybe a buy signal and maybe a cycle turn to the upside. But do we fade that, and do we hedge into it if we don't get a NAFTA deal? It seems like the trade issues are starting to be much more prominent in the currency markets, and it has me concerned, at least.
Hey, Brian, you want to take that up since he's asking the question? What do you think is next? And in that same prospect, since we've had a pretty good move up, do we look at NAFTA, some of the other trade aspects, and fade a deal should it be put into place?
Yeah, you know, we've had a big reaction with the NAFTA news, and we had a tremendous amount of export business come into the market, giving us a rally in corn and soybeans. Now, if we take away some of the effects of the NAFTA, that maybe it's not going to go into effect for 6 months, and we may have a deal ratified long before anything would go into effect. You're looking at planting progress and weather. And I think the market after last year seeing a record type yield coming in when planting was a little bit delayed and very dry weather during the summer is going to step back and look at the possibility that we're going to see big yields once again. We're getting the crop in the ground and what's going to end up being a normal pace with a lot of moisture. And when you see that moisture levels along with the rapid planting pace, I think the trade's going to have really no direction for them to go but back down to find some pressure.
Okay, so Mike, given all of those functions and NAFTA, and I suppose Brian's thinking we'll catch up pretty quickly in planting, what are your thoughts as it relates to fading a move upwards in ag?
I do feel like I've got to get the hedges in place for clients because we're kind of on a precipice of break-even/profit, Todd. I don't like the fact that if NAFTA doesn't get ratified before the July Mexican elections, and we see the new president who's winning by double digits, who's, from what I can tell, pretty much a Marxist, come in and kind of just rip apart the trade potential of another deal, then you're talking about months of potentially lost corn and bean and wheat and pork demand and hog demand. And so with the Mexican peso hitting a four-month low, it seems like it has been trading every bit of news almost coming out of the news wires about NAFTA. That suggests to me the hedge funds that are computer and algorithmically driven are very much in this market. And now we have an all-time low in the Argentine peso since they floated back in 2002. We've got a Brazilian real now at its weakest since June of 2016. And then we have a Russian ruble that is earlier this month was trading its weakest since November of 2016. So all of a sudden you have higher interest rates helping to feed a stronger dollar, and then a lack of trade deal, especially NAFTA, helping to feed a safe haven buy in the dollar. And at the same time, you're taking away the potential for a demand-led rally as you bring on this new crop supply. So when I look at it in that kind of totality, I really do want to get hedges in place here probably before the end of this month and before the end of the first week of May if I can get some price targets hit.
Ellen Dearden, are you of a mind that we need to be marketing new crop corn sooner rather than later as well?
Yeah, I from a cycle standpoint, I'm down into late May, early June, and I feel that we had about a 15, 16 cent trading range thus far in the December corn futures for the month of April. We'll probably stay in that range, maybe poke through the bottom side of that as we get into the second half of May. I'd be looking for hedge opportunities between this 412 level, which has been the high thus far this week, 412 and a fraction, and 420 area. I think that a defensive stand is what's called for.
And Aaron Curtis, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the planting pace so far. What do you think of it? Some of the work from the University of Illinois at this point that was just released earlier today, in fact, suggests that given where we are with the cold and wet soils for April, that we might have something between 5 and 10% more late planted corn than the average. So not 5 to 10% late planted corn, but above the usual amount that is late planted. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think we're probably close with that. I think obviously, looking at the Monday's afternoon's progress at 5% planted nationwide compared to the average of 14% suggests that we continue to be a little bit behind. And through Illinois here, most of the customers that we talk to, we've got a few planters rolling, but still some guys taking their time here a little bit and just getting some prep work done. It looks like once we see the temperature spike up this weekend, early next week, I think most everybody will be doing something. Of course, then we run into some rain here mid-week next week, including the possibility for some pretty sizable amounts around parts of the Corn Belt, so that might delay us a little bit. So I think on my Monday afternoon progress, I would expect it to continue to be a little bit behind average. I think it's just going to take a little while here to continue to get caught up. I think producers are still seeing some need to continue to get some work done. Still, temperatures continue to be on the cool side, continuing to see some moisture continue to be under the top end of the soil here. So I think it's going to still be a little bit of a slow progress getting going, although I think, next Monday and Tuesday, there's going to be a lot of dirt flying, Todd. So I think we can continue to make up a lot of time in a short amount of calendar space, and I think that's why the market continues to be, pretty subdued to this reaction as far as any sort of late planning.
Hey, Brian, I want to follow up with you on this just a little bit because I know you have an office there and you're from originally that northwestern part of Iowa. They should have and may still be covered, I think, in some snowfall. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But you believe that we're really going to move fast at this point and that we can put this corn crop in the ground quickly?
Yeah, we definitely will. I've talked with clients, like by Storm Lake, where we have an office, and
they are actually in the ground right now working the fields. There's dust flying. So there's no snow. It's melted last week, and it leaves plenty of moisture to work with. So really the conditions are really ideal, except that it is a little bit cold right now. And that's the one concern about putting some seed in the ground that producers have, is getting that ground temperature to warm up. But right now the ground is working perfectly. I think if you go a little farther north into Minnesota, into the Dakotas, that's where we're going to see any type of a delay seeding, where we're going to be behind. But again, within 1 to 2 weeks, I think the forecast is there where we're going to catch up, and we're going to look back and wonder, you know, maybe why we weren't making more sales when we had the opportunity, where the market had rallied up on some slow planting progress, and we were looking at ourselves with the higher U.S. dollar. Why aren't we making more sales and being a little bit more aggressive? There's a tremendous amount of old crop corn out there. I've driven past several small towns in the Western Corn Belt that have piles on the ground outside yet, you know, that are covered up and wanting to be moved, but there is not enough real demand to get those corn moving. And so it's a concern that I have. I think longer term, there's a lot of reasons to be bullish for corn, but when you're talking old crop marketing or marketing new crop here in the next several weeks to a couple months until you get into the heart of the growing season, you want to be a little defensive going forward because there's not that much bullish fundamental news out there.
Well, let me take, I think all four of you are thinking along the same lines here. So let me ask a couple of quick questions, because I guess as I've listened to some producers that I've talked with, that I've watched the fields, that these cold temperatures have, and the nighttime temperatures in particular, and we'll have a couple of warm days and warm nights next week. We're still, you know, I think going to the 30s tonight, even here in central Illinois, on Thursday evening, that these cold temperatures still have farmers spooked about putting a corn crop in the ground. I know they can move fast once they start, but it seems to me that they're not willing to budge until they get that 50-degree mark and get it consistently. Am I just wrong in my thought process about that, Ellen?
No, I've seen a little bit of action in the Peoria area. I know that there is some corn up in northern Stark County spiked through yesterday, but I think guys are being pretty conservative, and maybe it's tied into the lack of a replant policy with many of these seed companies.
Oh, I hadn't heard that, I guess, because I don't farm. Did they change that policy and they're not willing to cover as many bushels?
Yes.
Well, that'll slow things down.
I think it has. And guys have big equipment. They feel like they're not under the gun yet, and maybe they won't feel that they are under the gun till we get to the end of next week when we have a USDA report again. That's kind of a give-up time, I would think, around the 8th or the 10th of May.
All right. So, Ellen, let's have you change gears on me. You wanted to talk about soybeans in China. You're correct that this is one of the times of the year soybeans would not be flowing out of the United States, not very quickly anyway, to China, because most of them would have turned to Brazil, where that crop is coming from. How soon do you think they'll get back to us? In what kind of time frame?
I think the mentality is that the mid to late summer, they'll be back into the U.S. for beans, unless there is some type of a bigger blow up on this, on trade issues. But I don't think we should be nervous at this stage of the game. But keep in mind that the Mid-South has been pretty slow about getting their crop in. And so some of this shorter maturity beans that go down the river to the Gulf are not going to be moving by Labor Day out of that region.
Mike Susilo, I'd like to know what you think about soybeans and the market in general, but I'd also like to know in your part of the world, in Kansas, where producers have begun to plant a whole lot more soybeans than they have in the past, and then all the way up to the Dakotas, where they put a lot of soybeans in, their largest crop, in fact, in that state. What do you think producers will be doing this year?
I think the Milo situation that came up, about a week ago with China, has probably got some producers switching some seed out of Milo into soybeans. So I think that's a big area of concern where more soybeans could come in.
Wait, I just want to double check. From, so rather Milo or sorghum, And they'll switch to soybeans instead of corn for that crop?
Yeah, I think they're already heading towards Milo because of the drought-tolerant potential of it, Todd. And if they lose their cash basis because of the Milo situation, then I think beans work a lot better as far as the cash price of beans versus the cash price of Milo. I think that's what I'm hearing, at least. And, you know, that's a pretty narrow area of Kansas that's well west of me where you have a lot of facilities that take on the Milo and then rail it for the export market. But other than that, I think the spring wheat planting delays in South Dakota especially are attracting more bean acres. I think this is the biggest feature to the May report that Ellen was talking about, was the potential for the first sign of new crop bean acres in by USDA here in the next 10 days is potentially seeing a bigger number here because of some of these working parts that have been in the markets the last 3 or 4 weeks, and USDA picks up on that. The other thing I would say to you is I think your earlier point about the corn planting delays, I think that's an excellent point to make. And I say that because, and we talked about this on Friday's closing market report, I think this adds to the idea that the cash market in the wheat, the cash market in the corn could be very different from the futures market. In other words, that the funds and the investors don't put a premium in the wheat market, don't put a premium in the corn market, and instead the cash basis and the local areas that have the potential for crop problems and production problems really do most of the work. And I would just say we saw it once again on Monday's crop report with the winter wheat conditions. I mean, we're still running almost 5 times worse than last year in Texas, 4 times worse in Kansas, and 5 times worse in Oklahoma for wheat conditions in terms of their very poor ranking versus last year. Trade did not care about that, it seemed to me, until we got some positive news about NAFTA, and then they swung back around and started trading the hard red wheat conditions. So I think this is a great time to watch the hard red wheat and the wheat futures overall and say, okay, maybe this is how the corn's going to trade in terms of a lack of respect by the futures and the longs in this market.
So you're of a mind that you need to ignore, to some extent, the futures market, and your cash basis would be where you need to really think about the marketing problems.
I'm in the mindset that you hedge the paper and be very careful about doing too much on the cash side, especially when it comes to the basis.
Oh, for new crop. Okay, right.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. So let's go through each of you and come back, and we'll get some pricing. Start with old crop corn, Mike. What do we do with those bushels that are left? Anything at this point, or do we stand pat and wait for a summertime rally?
I'm like the other folks. I think there's a lot of corn ready to come out. I think as you get planters rolling, that will be much more desirable. If you don't have something to feed the bull on the report and you're still close to $4 July corn, you'll see corn come out. So if you get 405 before the report, 410 before the report, I think it's a good idea to get some sales started.
Aaron Curtis, your thought?
Yeah, you know, for the most part, our estimation is that, you know, the corn producer still, you know, has about 25 to 30% of their old crop corn left, which is, you know, pretty low compared to where we set, you know, the last couple years. We tend to carry a little more of that into the summer here the last couple years, but the farmer's been much more active here, and I think they'll continue to stay somewhat quiet here as we move into planting time. I think we'll start marking a few things on the calendar as far as getting the corn planted, getting the corn up, getting it pollinated. Those kind of things will continue to move a little bit out, but still looking for a little bit of an upside here, Todd, but looking for, you know, somewhere in that 405, 410 on July futures, and then would probably be a willing seller again if we saw something in that range. So, you know, 10 to 15 cents from where we closed today.
Yeah, we, you know, in our company, we have a marketing service. We are 100% sold of old crop corn, soybeans, and very close to that on wheat. I really don't look for much in the way of upward cash movement. This is, I think, a time frame where producers get busy in the fields, kind of forget about doing some marketing. We'll give you an opportunity. If you want to make some cash sales, basis likely it will narrow in certain areas, and that's something I think I really watch, lock in some a little bit narrowing basis, try and get rid of the old crop product. And then if we do get a break in these markets, if we get a break into May, early June, prices become attractive again from the buy side, take a shot at re-ownership with some low-cost option strategies, you know, to prepare yourself for the growing season. But I just don't want to bank on waiting on weather in the United States to be adverse this summer to give us an opportunity to sell into. I want to be a little bit more proactive than that.
And finally, Ellen Dearden, both the old crop corn, and you can transition to new crop, but I'd like you to answer on the old crop corn the question that Aaron Curtis gave us, which is what would engage them to actually make an additional sale as well. So what are your thoughts on old crop corn to begin with?
I think that we've got to see some basis tightening. The Gulf corn basis improved this week for the nearby slots. And I think that will encourage some basis improvement on the Illinois and Mississippi rivers. But you get west of Des Moines and the basis is sloppy. There's not a lot of demand. It's a very localized situation. I want to be out of old crop corn in here. I think there's very little upside potential. I think there is basis improvement that could come, however. So I would be a hedger first on futures, and then they lock in the basis as we move down into the later part of March. New crop sales, I've been putting a toe in the water. I'm not all that excited about locking in a 360 flat cash price for fall delivery. Doesn't look very attractive to very many growers. But I think we need to be on the defensive with short futures in this 12 to 420 range basis, the December futures.
And so it appears, Ellen Dearden, that farmers have decided, those who are going anyway, that soybeans and corn can go in the ground at the same time at a fairly quick rate. Does this make a difference to you at all as you look forward for yield, for price, or any other items?
Well, I would hope that the decision is made because the yield could be higher for soybeans planted early, but I'm not sure what supports that. I think the fact that both are being planted simultaneously in our neighborhood suggests that those extra acres that usually go into corn during a good early spell of dry weather may not occur. So the increase in corn acres, although I think will be above 88 million corn acres, may not get to 90 million corn acres. I think there's too much in putting beans in and putting beans in quickly.
Brian Hoops, your thought on the bean acreage?
I'm in agreement that we're going to see a few more corn acres than what the USDA said in March. It may not be anywhere close to last year, but it will be more than what they had originally said. I think the soybeans will be significantly more than what the USDA said. Not only are we likely to see some wheat acres turnover into corn or soybeans, but when producers got hit with the sorghum tariffs from China, a lot of those acres I think will end up going to soybeans. Minneapolis spring wheat fell to contract lows right after the acreage report, where soybeans rallied to contract highs. That price movement probably shifted some producers' mindset to switch over to soybeans. Plus, there are some planting delays in the Dakotas and into Minnesota. Producers, if they are looking at the price, looking at a little bit of a delayed seeding, may not go forward with plans of planting those spring wheat acres. And I think they shift to soybeans number one and then corn number two. So I think your soybean values, I'm not in the camp that you're going to see a huge increase in ending stocks, but I don't think we're going to fall significantly below 400 million either. But in that 400 to 500 million bushel range by the time you end up with fall prices, which I think will be much lower than where they are currently.
Mike Zuzulo, I'd like to stay with soybeans, but could you talk a little bit about the South American crop, Argentina in particular? They're, around 50-55% of the way harvested at this point?
Yeah, we've got problems. It's been too wet. I think this, again, goes to the mindset that the cash market and the global market and the lack of competition in corn is very much there. I think we've still got a good window of opportunity the next 6 months to be able to get into a really sweet spot for the demand side. As long as we don't see the global prices get taken down because of our sharply higher dollar. But I think this goes in line with being more of a futures hedger than a cash hedger, because we could have some more problems in the Argentine and the Safrina second crop Brazil corn crop as well. And I think that's something to definitely put into your marketing plan.
Aaron Curtis, farmers in recent years have been really good about marketing soybeans up front. Did they do so this year?
It's been pretty active. I think we estimate an old crop anyway, about 90% sold. So really not much left to be sold there. And I think when the farmer continued to work out of old crop beans, they turned to new crop. And I think especially the ones that were going to put a few more bean acres in there. So, I think they've been pretty good about getting some stuff on here ahead of time. We asked around here a couple weeks ago if these tariff concerns were causing them to be, going to switch any more acres away from soybeans. And, nobody really got the sense that was really going to be an impact. I still think the, bean acres number is going to be up a little bit from that 89 million. But you start plugging in the math, the balance sheet possibilities, and we'll see what the USDA says here in a couple weeks. But even at around a 50 bushel an acre yield, that still brings you somewhere in that 500 to 500 million ending stocks, which doesn't scream 1050 beans by any means. So, that would suggest that we continue to see some weakness here as we move into the fall, just like we saw a year ago. So that, continues to argue that the producer needs to continue to be somewhat cognizant of these bean rallies that we tend to see over the last few weeks when we get that market back up closer to that 1050 November bean mark on the futures, continue to be get kind of up to where you need to be price-wise in terms of just percentage sold, kind of get to where you want to be comfortable going into the fall here. And I think when we see those balances, you got to be willing to act, at least on the future side.
Let's get a final word now from each of you. I think I'll start with you, Ellen Dearden from AgReview out of Morton, Illinois.
Well, we're certainly going to be talking about inflation. And if you look at the dollar, it looks like it's headed to 92.5 to 93.5. And that doesn't really bode well for our export pace.
Mike Zuzula of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting.
I think we'll go back to where we've been the past 3 or 4 months, Todd, in terms of what does a producer look for upside price potential. First notice day in meal is Sunday night. If we've got a $409 U.S. Gulf price in meal and Argentina's at $443, and Rotterdam is at almost 470. Will that futures price and that cash price match up a lot better? Watch the meal for leadership to the upside going into the crop report and make hedge game plan set out for that.
Brian Hoops from Midwest Market Solutions, your final thoughts.
I agree. I like to manage the risk here through some future sales, some put options, that sort of thing. I think there is significant downside, especially when we get into the June acreage report. That would be the key for me. Unless we get some real adverse weather into the summer growing season, I think we are going to plant more soybeans this year. We're going to have a better yielding crop of soybeans because of the spring moisture that we have. Unless we turn very hot and very dry, I don't look for us to be anywhere close to $10 by the time fall harvest rolls around.
And Aaron Curtis from Midco in Bloomington.
Short term, I think we continue to be pretty range bound here as we continue to see how planting progress goes. I think Mike mentioned it, just a couple weather stories to continue to watch. You're obviously Argentina harvest progress, but the shape of the second corn crop there in southern Brazil, if that continues to be downgraded, that's going to have an impact on corn exports here as we move into the fall. And start doing the math on 88 million acres, that kind of does tighten up the corn balance sheet here a little bit, so might give some more opportunities here as we move through the spring and summer. But short term, into that May 10th crop report, continue to expect it to be somewhat quiet here.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org, where you can listen to the whole of our agricultural programming. Our panelists this week for the program have included Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, Ellen Dearden from AgReview in Morton, Illinois, Brian Hoops of Midwest Market Solutions out of Springfield, Missouri, and from Atchison, Kansas, Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.